Ian, thank you so much for talking to me about your exciting new pamphlet from Ignition Press, Burnt Island. It's a great pleasure to have worked with you as an editor on it. It's been really exciting to see how it's developed over time. Some people, of course, won't know what or where Burnt Island is. It's a place in Scotland. But could you tell us just a kind of little, maybe potted history of the place before we get into talking about the poems?
Of course, Well, geographically, it's just north of Edinburgh, and it sits on the Firth of Forth, on the Forth estuary, and it's a very beautiful town these days. A fact which was kind of pointed out to me by my wife when she visited. She said she couldn't believe I was from a place as beautiful as Burnt Island is, and that kind of shocked me when she said that, because when I was growing up, it was quite an industrial town, or was on the point of becoming post-industrial. So I used to have I used to watch and listen to the trucks full of bauxite coming up the road in front of me from the docks, and there'd be kind of red dust on the windowsills and on the street, and it would go to the aluminium processing plant, which was, like, I think stuff used in toothpaste was that plant's main kind of main thing. But it was quite an industrial town, and there was a history there of shipbuilding that my family were involved in, a history of being a shale mining town, and of being a hub for coal mining as well. All the coal that used to get mined in West Fife and in Central Fife used to come through Burnt Island in the years before the Forth Bridge. Anyway, it was all through Burnt Island, so it used to be a very industrial town, and then it's become a kind of commuting town over time.
And one of the great things, I guess, about your pamphlet is that it does give us a sense of that history, which it does really beautifully, the kind of sense of both the beauty of the place, but also kind of what its heritage, I suppose, has been over quite a long period of time. Actually, we're dealing with quite an extended period of time, not just, when you were living there, but also kind of maybe before that and a little bit about what it's like now. So it's really exciting to give this kind of cross section of a place and the kind of memories and histories of it. And the first poem in the pamphlet kind of sets us on the way towards, I suppose, the intertwining of that sort of national history with your own personal history, because there's obviously a lot of family in the pamphlet as well. And at the end of that first poem, which is called Key, there's a couple of lines where it describes a librarian turning on part of an exhibition, which still exists. In sort of the Library Museum in Burnt Island, which has got an Edwardian fair. And you write that she'll show you where the switch is and how to start the music. And I was thinking about it, there's quite a lot of kind of references to sound and music in the pamphlet. So I was wondering what kind of music you were kind of encountering, I suppose, in your head when you were putting the pamphlet together. Was it kind of harmonious? Were you happy about thinking back on these memories? Was it discordant? Were there things that you remembered that maybe you hadn't thought about for a long time? What was it like to kind of re-encounter the town in the writing of the poems?
First of all, I want to say really that the book is kind of like a composite of different memories, and so that you mentioned family there, and so people have told me stories about it, so, and from time before they were alive as well, there is this kind of composite of or composition of different time periods going getting placed into almost into the present within the book, and so I think in that way it kind of acts like folk music. In some sense, and so, it's like all these things getting carried from the past but brought into the present, and hopefully creating some, some good moments in the book. When the music that's referred to at the start, I guess, is to do with a kind of merry-go-round music or something kind of mechanical and something kind of circular there, and then that poem is supposed to kind of like point you towards this kind of circularity, I think, as well. And maybe going back in time, but also it being a circle, being like a merry-go-round. But yeah, like there's a feeling through it, I think, of folk music, but also maybe of religious music, and the idea of what we hold on to and what we can carry with us is going into the music. But then, a lot also to do with air and water, and so kind of natural sounds. So there's maybe a kind of like a sort of found sounds and ambient music kind of thing going on through there as well, that sometimes can be a bit discordant. And I don't know, I hope it's not in any way like a sad collection of poems. I think there's kind of like there's joy in it as well, and there's optimism and hopefulness in it. But it is kind of like a, it was a strange thing that the kind of the start of this book probably came from, or one of the starts of the book probably came from being stuck in Burnt Island for 4 months, which was kind of 3 months and 2 weeks longer than I intended to be stuck there, during the COVID thing, where I went to visit my mother who was on her own, and then they stopped flights. And so I had this kind of weird, almost anxious feeling of being stuck in this town that I'd grown up in, and all the memories of being there. And I was with my young son, who was maybe a year old at the time, pushing around the streets. But I felt this kind of a kind of anxiety really about being there. And maybe some of the music that comes through, or some of the language that comes through, echoes that kind of feeling as well of something being not quite right in the place. So not completely harmonious, I would say, as well.
So when you say not, that's really interesting. So when you say not quite right, do you mean like the fact that you don't really fit in there anymore? Because I mean, one of the really fascinating things, extraordinary things about that Edwardian fair is that there is actually a cardboard cutout of you when you were a boy, right? Because that exhibition has been there for years, and that I guess that they it's obviously so brilliant, and the people have performed their parts so well that they don't want to move it. But there is actually you are actually still in there as a cardboard cutout. So there's a kind of sense of, and that's what the poem Key is partly about, isn't it? It's kind of sense in which there's still a presence. You have this presence there in the museum, even though it's a kind of younger version of yourself. So how do you square that kind of younger version of yourself, I suppose, with you going back and then more recently having stayed there for months?
Well, it's very odd. I mean, there's lots of things about it that are quite strange. I mean, so I'm quite literally there's a piece of me that'll never leave, and or doesn't seem to be on the point of leaving. And I left when I was 18, and moved to Glasgow, and I never lived in the town again after that. But those years, you don't get called formative years for nothing, do they? They're kind of like, it does form you and shape you, and then you can't really move away from it. So even though I've been quite nomadic in my adult life, that there's a sort of there's part of me that belongs to Burnt Island, and part of me that'll never leave, and part of me that always keeps going back to it. So yeah, it's a very strange thing, I think, that there are always going to be these connections to a place, and they're always, even though you're thinking back in the past, it's always part of what you are now. And I hope that applies to the book in general as well, that even though quite a lot is referring to the past, they are also part of what we are now, and of part of what maybe a broader picture of what the world is now is still represented in what Burnt Island was, as a kind of microcosm of these different things.
So one of the things we were talking about there actually is that kind of immersive quality, maybe it's through the sound and the kind of sensuality of some of the poems and the kind of the landscapes which it describes. And that, I think that really comes across in the After the Shift poem, which is the second poem in the collection, actually. So it gives us a real kind of deep sort of dive into the place and the atmosphere of the place in particular. So would you mind reading that? And then we can talk about it.
After the shift. Half asleep, the hours drift and spread, meandering in cavities, leaking through weep holes. The beating in the walls is the butcher at his bones, relimiting the body. There's an ending out by the harbour, where halyards clatter and wind moves through the warehouse, over yards of ivy, shards of glass, with gulls like tinfoil flecks above the dawn, bright gable steps whirling into light. The swirl of mackerel tails on concrete floors. Fish eyes shine like a fool's 6 million, glowing rivets on the bridge, or burning coals and engines trailing vapor, all seen clear as Granny Thompson's visions of the dead upon the stage.
So yeah, so this poem, and I suppose also what you've just been saying about Burnt Island and its different sort of manifestations, really speaks, I suppose, to the way in which the pamphlet does present this sort of different version to the kind of Burnt Islands we get in the tourist brochures, right? I mean, so the I think the Fife Tourist Board talks about the kind of things you might expect, I suppose, the long sandy beach, the fun fair, The Highland Games, which I hadn't actually realized there was a big Highland Games there, but that's a big deal as well. And you know, ice cream and playing mini golf and all this kind of stuff. So, but that's the tourist version, right? This is not what you're getting here. This is a different kind of vision. I mean, quite literally towards the end of the poem. So I was interested in the title, I suppose, of this poem, and what kind of shifts are being described, because they literally, you know, shift of work of kind of to do with labor, but also this kind of shifting between things like life and death. There's transformations that take place, a sort of metaphor in here, for example, of the gulls like the tinfoil flecks. So that kind of shifting. How do you understand the kind of ideas about sort of shifting or changing of state or moving from one kind of idea to another in this poem?
I mean, there are at least three different shifts getting referred to, I suppose, in the poem. There is the kind of the work shift, finishing a shift. There's this kind of unknown time where perhaps the speaker of the poem is maybe tired or between things, or listening to someone else work through a wall while they're not working. And then there's the shift as well, with maybe the post-industrial kind of shift. Maybe the origin of this poem was a walk around Burnt Island docks. I think I'm going to get kind of in trouble with some people from Burnt Island for some of the things in this book, because I don't mention that the Highland Games is the second oldest Highland Games in Scotland, or I don't mention the golf course is one of the oldest golf courses in the world, or that, how beautiful the town is from a tourist point of view. But this poem, came about from kind of walking around next to where the old Burnt Island Fabrications units were, and they're abandoned just now. That company closed its doors a few years ago, and so you've got these kind of like a big empty spaces and overgrown things and broken glass, and kind of it's part of the town that people don't really go to very much, but it's still part of the town. So there's that kind of represented in the poem as well. And then beyond that, there's the idea of, as you mentioned, of shifting states. My great grandmother, my Granny Thompson, who kind of, I don't know, maybe represents sort of like an idea, a Scottish idea of all Jock Thompson's bairns, we're all kind of like from the same source at some point. She was a very, in real life, she was a very kind of down to earth and serious woman, not flippant or kind of, she would say what she meant all the time. And she once saw visions on a stage in a kind of a seance that she'd attended, and I don't know what she was doing there, but somebody had persuaded her to go along, and then she saw kind of her brother who died in Mesopotamia, now Iraq, and in the First World War, and she saw other people from her youth that had passed away, that had died. And so there was a kind of thing in there, and that gets repeated throughout the book as well, about almost like ghosts, or about presences which you kind of feel are there, but they're not, maybe. And then there's the idea of the bridge, of crossing a bridge in the poem as well. So it does shift between ideas very quickly, this poem, starting at kind of at one point of somebody listening through a wall at somebody working, and finishing off with an idea of people crossing over a bridge, which, is quite a well-used metaphor, I think, but it's that relates to a painting by a guy called Andrew Young, which hangs in Burnt Island Borough Chambers, of people from the town passing from one side of the bridge to another, and people are falling through the cracks on the bridge, and there's angels in the sky looking down at the people from the town as they're either uncertain about how they can cross or failing to cross the bridge. And it refers to the fourth bridge as well, which my great grandmother grew up watching as it was built. So, and that's referred to in the book as well. But the idea of kind of something reaching out, as a bridge is built, reaching out from one space to another, is in there. So a lot of shifts going on in that one poem.
Yeah, I really love the and one of the images in particular that actually is thinking about the bridge, the comparison, the fish eyes shining like a full 6 million glowing rivets on the bridge, or burning coals and engines, training vapors. Wonderful. It's such a great, it's very evocative that of, as you say, I suppose, one moving from one kind of labor, whether it's the fishing or the processing of the fish, through to the labor on the bridge, the building of the bridge, or indeed the painting of the bridge, or all the upkeep that has to go along with that. gigantic structure. So maybe we can think a little bit there about kind of labor, because there's also kind of references in here to, as you were saying, the kind of the body. And there's a really fascinating line. It's line 7, I think, where you're talking about 7 and 8, relimiting the body, you know, the butcher at his bones, relimiting the body. So I wondered if you could describe what that means, because it seems like is it a kind of sense of bringing us back to a limit? Work or labor somehow is about always day to day, kind of bringing us back to what's known about the body, or kind of how far the body can be pushed, and what damage that can potentially do. Because you also then, you know, there's you talk in the next line about the ending as well. So there's a sense of kind of endings in this poem, not just shifting from one thing to another, but possible ends to maybe people's working lives, or just kind of lives, or understandings of the world.
I mean, there's two ways in which you can think about relimiting the body, relimiting as in imposing limits on it, or limits that are imposed on it. And that, as you say, it could be, through labor, when your main resource is your body. As a physical laborer, you use it up, and it gets used up, and then you can't work anymore. I'm really lucky that I've moved from being a laborer using my body to being able to do the work that I do now, where I don't have to rely on that anymore, because it's kind of expected, right, in the post-industrial change that our work in any kind of post-industrial area is going to be more towards the intellectual kind of realm and less towards the physical. And in some ways, the physical work has been kind of devalued, I think. But the other way of thinking about relimiting the body is it going beyond the limits that are imposed on it. And so, although the butcher's relimiting perhaps chicken bodies or kind of or whatever they're doing in their work, they're re physically relimiting something. There's also an idea later on in the poem of going beyond the limits of the things that you do, having echoes beyond your physical life. And I'm not necessarily talking about the ghosts as seen as on the stage, but the things that we do in writing, for example, or in art, or in any kind of well-built object or well-made object. So that relimits the body as well, in some sense, I think.
There's another poem in the pamphlet which also deals with that kind of question of work very directly, which is the apprenticeship's poem, which is a really beautiful little poem, but also has this, again, like we're saying before, this kind of undercurrent of something not quite, it's not quite right, but it's sort of uncomfortable. That kind of sense in which towards the end there's a description there about sleight of hand, which brings us back to, I suppose, trickery and seeing things that aren't there. We see the metal's worth, you write, and not what's broken. So again, that seems to be a kind of critique of how bodies are used up in labor. Whether somebody doing industrial work, for example, what is their future once, you know, the body has been, I suppose, limited forever. So was that an important part of what you wanted to get at in the pamphlet more broadly? That kind of sense of, you know, who is doing that work and what does it mean?
Especially these days, the people who are doing most of the physical labor, to produce the products that we consume, or the vehicles that we were flown around in, or sailing, or whatever, they're more and more invisible to us in the UK. They're more invisible to us in the UK than they've ever been, probably. But it's still work that's going on, and those resources are still being used up, resources of human labor, of the human body, but also resources like natural resources as well. So it's still going on, and I think that's why it's not just about the past. This is happening somewhere else. That shift has also occurred. So I did want to talk about labor, because sometimes I feel like it's not kind of represented as much as it should be when it's such a huge part of the population of the world that's involved in that kind of that's involved in physical work. I mean, something in that poem, Apprenticeships. I mean, a little anecdote that I can mention to kind of expand on what's in that poem is that when I was an apprentice in the dockyard, an apprenticeship that I failed, by the way, I was kind of asked to leave after a year because I was maybe the worst apprentice they've ever had. Part of what we had to do was file by hand a chunk of steel to, it was called precision engineering, I think was the name of the module that we were doing. and you had to file something down to within a millimeter. You know, within kind of a couple of days of doing that, your hands are blistered all over, and it's mentally tough to go in the next day and pick up the tools and carry on with it. So you know, your body is kind of like literally breaking up while doing that, but it's not as important as the work. And that's what it feels to me with a lot of things where physical labor is involved, is there's an attitude that you're kind of encouraged to adopt, which is that your body is not as important as the work that's being done. Just get on with it, you know. Don't worry about the pain. Don't worry about how it feels in your back or in your hands or anything. Just do it, get the work done. So there's kind of like an idea there in apprenticeships of almost like breaking in a horse. You know, that's what's important about an apprenticeship, is that you give yourself to the work. I wasn't very good at doing that. I kind of had ideas of being something else. you know, at 16 years old, I was 15 when I left school, but 16 when I started there. I had to wait till September to start there. You know, I lasted a year in the job, but you know, the whole time I was kind of, you know, I wanted to be like a singer in a band or an actor on a stage or something. Dreams that everyone thought was kind of ridiculous at the time. And I think at the same time, that's fine that things need to be done, things need to be made, but at least acknowledge as well that there's a human being there that has depth and has emotional range and intellect and things like that as well. It's not just a body.
And a lot of that emotional range, I suppose, also is encompassed by the number of family members who are mentioned in the pamphlet. And obviously, and you have in your acknowledgements, you mention, you know, a little bit more about, you know, the dates of these people who they were in relation to you. But there are probably, I don't know, maybe at least half a dozen poems which kind of have this sort of intersection with family. Some very specific ones. There's a poem called Edna Adrift, which is dated 1992, Catherine Unsung, 1916, Peggy Forever, 1952. And I guess one of the, you've got the interesting sort of juxtaposition there between, on the one hand, you know, the shipbuilding poems, I suppose, all the poems which are about sort of effectively kind of male labour, or maybe the male members of your family who were working in the yards and so on. And then these female characters as well, these female figures. So there's a really interesting balance there between, on the one hand, the kind of the masculine side, I suppose, of the pamphlet, and if you like, the feminine side. And some of them, I mean, things like the Peggy Forever poem is very much about, you know, what is it like to be a young woman in the world trying to sort of make your way. And some of the other ones maybe kind of reflective on sort of Edna is more of a poem about kind of an older woman as well, isn't it? So why was that important? Why are you trying to get across this kind of sense of, are you trying to achieve a sort of balance between the sort of male female? Are you trying to give a kind of more holistic view, I suppose, of how your family's related to Burnt Island over the years?
I mean, yeah, I'm related to the town mainly on my mother's side. My mother was born in Burnt Island. She was born in a house in Burnt Island, and so my grandmother was from there. My great grandmother moved there from South Queensferry. My great great grandmother's from South Queensferry, just you know, underneath the bridge. When I was first starting to write poetry, which is only about 6 years ago, I'd written a story about the kind of from my mother's stories, my mother telling me of things that happened in the family. And I wrote it all as a big story. And it didn't really kind of go anywhere in a normal story structure. But my wife, who's Leila Benitez James, encouraged me to write poetry and to change it into poetry. So I went through this thing where I was kind of like sculpting this story and chipping away at this big story to find little moments in it which could work as poetry. And some moments did appear. It was like more about, that was kind of more about practice and learning than anything else, probably. But there's some moments that did appear, and they were all to do with the women in my family who all worked. And the references to work, whether it's the fish eyes, that's to do with my gran, who worked in a fish processing plant in Burnt Island. Her bringing back fish has kind of led to a lifelong kind of dislike of fish on my mother's part. She still can't really eat fish, occasional fish and chips, and that's it. She also worked in a bottling plant by the beach in Petacre, just you know, about 2 miles along the coast from Burnt Island. There's labour that's been involved there all the way through that side of the family. My great grandmother was, you know, would go and fish on her boat. It was a very small boat and just with a fishing line, but she'd go on there. That would add to what the family had. And that's, you know, that's from great great grandmother. So a long time ago. But yeah, all these stories, it's not just for balance, it's because they're important, as important as anything else that happens. And nothing would happen without their involvement. So, you know, in a lot of ways, it's more important than anything else in the book. I talk about my great great grandmother, about all of us being carried by her blood, and the kind of the family labor that's done as well, which again is often invisible, is massively important. There's not a huge amount of, about that in here, but maybe that's something I could write about, or that certainly should be written about more.
It means you end up with this very strong kind of narrative, really. I mean, even though you've discarded to an extent, or you've kind of dipped into that narrative you actually wrote originally about the family, you've actually got quite a strong narrative in the pamphlet. And there's this kind of narrative pulse where we're kind of pulled from one character to another, or one kind of personal history to another. But a lot of them, as you were saying earlier, I suppose, kind of deal with loss. I mean, the poem Catherine Unsung 1916 in particular is a really poignant poem, actually, kind of dealing with questions of kind of loss and kind of memory through family as well. Loss of industry, loss of people, loss of self as well. I suppose you were talking earlier about the extent to which you that younger version of yourself is there, but it's been replaced by a kind of older version of yourself now. So I guess that with those kind of senses of loss, there's always, and you're reflecting on a particular place in childhood, there's always a risk that you kind of end up writing kind of nostalgia or nostalgic poems. But actually, I having talked to you about this before, I know that's something you were trying to avoid very directly, especially with regards to kind of working people or work or the place itself. So could you say a little bit about why that was important to kind of make sure that it was not a nostalgic treatment of whether it's your family or the place itself?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think it's really important that, you know, you talk about the book existing in the present and not just referring to things from the past, but referring to things that, as I've mentioned already, that exist elsewhere. So it's not just nostalgia, it's also about now, because what happened in Burnt Island can happen anywhere. And in that case, it's about the future as well, because work can shift from one place to another quite easily. And it doesn't matter about the family histories and about people's feelings or about what's gone on before. It'll just shift for purely monetary reasons and quickly at times. And it doesn't matter about what's left behind, about the tailings, or about the kind of or about the damage, the environmental damage, or in some cases maybe, you know, the trauma that's occurred. So it's kind of about that as well. There's still coal being mined in other places in the world. It's not being mined in Scotland anymore, but it's still being mined. There's still ships being built. There's still, you know, the red dust that was on my windowsill as a child is on the windowsill of children's bedrooms in China. You know, you look at Google Maps and you can see that very distinctive red kind of coloring at different places all around the world, where there's open cast mining, or where bauxite's being processed. And that's kind of, you know, part of Catherine Unsung as well, is talking about a photograph which exists now, and looking at that photograph and then allowing it to lead you back to the past, and then in kind of a circular way coming back to the present again.
That's such a good explanation, because it also gives a sense of what poetry is capable of doing. One of the things it can do, in the sense that it can kind of really zoom in on one particular person or event, as you were saying earlier, one particular episode, and yet also have this kind of microcosm, microcosmic quality to it. So it kind of speaks to that particular idea, but it also kind of, you can read into it all these different references, as you say. You could read it, and one of the things you're saying about the pamphlet, I think, previously, is the idea that it might be about Burnt Island, but there's going to be plenty of people who are not in Burnt Island, who could be reading it. So there's a sense in which the pamphlet itself will kind of go out into the world and have some kind of effect on the way people, maybe not just perceive Burnt Island and Scotland, but also just the way they perceive themselves and how they relate to the kind of the people in the pamphlet and the images that you're describing here. So it's been great talking to you about it. Thank you so much. We'll really look forward to launching it and getting it out there in the world for people to read.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited about it, and about the possibilities that come about when people do read into it and dig into it, and hopefully the creative possibilities that come from reading poetry as well. That's, you know, always interesting. It comes part of a continuum. Hopefully this is, you know, part of that continuum.